Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
I'm excited to introduce you guys to this brand new registered 501c3 organization. It's pending, I should say, but it's a very cool organization. It's called the Chick Rosnick Boxing Club Incorporated, and it's dedicated to teaching boxing to boys and girls in the Stratford area. So to join us and talk a little bit about this project, what it's going to mean, why it was created, both Hal and Michael Rosnick, father and son attorneys, I'm very excited to have you both here this morning. Good morning. How are you both?
Great. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Michael, first of all, could you start by telling us where did this idea even come from, and what's the point of it?
Well, my father and I had discussions about how we can honor our grandfather. My grandfather and his father. Boxing was always a love of my grandfather, Chick. And our nonprofit is the Chick Rosnick Boxing Club. It's located at 360 Sniffins Lane in Stratford. And the easiest way to describe our mission is for me to read our mission statement, which is to improve the lives of young people by instilling in them, through the disciplines of boxing and martial arts, to having the proper attitudes, discipline, motivation, and character necessary to live a healthy and happy life.
Now, Michael, I'm curious, were you or your father, Hal, you could jump in as well. Did either of you guys box?
I did. Just very on an amateur level, not a competitive level. A good friend of mine and I used to box down at the Arctic Boys Club with George Russo. We were the punching bags for the state police because the club was training state policemen, and they needed to spar. And my friend and I were the constant punching bag for a number of years down on Arctic Street in Bridgeport.
Wow. Now, right now, what I think is interesting about this idea coming to fruition is that a lot of people are talking about, we're talking about it on this show constantly, school shootings, violence, gun control, all of that. Hal, in your opinion, how is Chick Rosnick Boxing Club going to respond to what is going on right now here in Connecticut and across the country?
That's a great question. And we've formed the club in anticipation of and to address exactly that issue, because various studies have shown that boxing is the best sport to reduce gang violence. It is a means to manage aggression and reduce violence itself. The values and skills we teach of hard work, self-discipline, and self-control reduce violence, according to a number of studies around the world. In fact, there's a recent grant that we may look to apply to where the federal government has identified athletics in particular as a means to reduce gang violence and control violence. So I think we're right on top of the issue.
Hal and Michael Rosnick are here. They're attorneys with Miller, Rosnick, D'Amico, August, and Butler. And they also are a father-son duo who have decided to come up with a nonprofit organization. It is called the Chick Rosnick Boxing Club, which is named after Hal's father. And Michael, tell us, you know, the boys and girls who would be participating in this program, how old are they? Where are they from? Like, who's your target audience here?
The varying ages. They begin at 6-7 years old and typically go into 25 range. However, you have some that are older as well. Predominantly, the kids are coming from Stratford now, but we're also looking to the surrounding communities here locally to incorporate other communities to grow the program and to get more youth involved. The more youth that are involved, the more successful our program will be, hopefully. The more lives we can touch, the more we can help. And that's what our goal is, to give back to the community.
Mm-hmm. And could you tell us a little more about the facility that the club is being housed in and who's even running the program?
Sure. The easiest way for a lot of the listeners to imagine is just think of the Rocky movies. Think of the gym Rocky trained in, but better. We're located at 360 Sniffens Lane in Stratford. We've recently completed a great deal of renovations. We have two full rings in the facility, heavy bags, speed bags, treadmills, weights. We're pretty proud of how it came out.
And Hal, if you don't mind me asking, you know, because I know you had said you were an amateur boxer. Obviously, this was a huge passion of your father's. But what did you get out of the sport? What did you find were some of the values you got out of it?
First of all, I wouldn't quite go to the level that I was an amateur boxer. I participated, ended up ripping out my shoulder. So what I get out of it, I got a lot of beatings, but I had a lot of fun doing it. But it did educate me to the fact that the boxing program, whether it be competitive or just a discipline and for non-competition, really helps you control aggression and is a great means of conflict resolution.
Mm. And Michael, I'm curious, is the goal here to make or create, I should say, serious competitors, professional boxers, or is it really to, you know, talk about some of the things that your dad just touched on, which is discipline and getting aggression out, but also finding a really fun sport that gives you this incredible identity? Like, what do you think is the ultimate goal for Chick Rosnick Boxing?
I would suggest a bit of both of what you just described and all of the above. Of course, we'd love to have competitive boxing, and Martin Chisholm's son, Joseph, is at an extremely high level. We welcome individuals from all levels, beginning, immediate, intermediary to professional level. And for those that want to compete on the amateur or professional level, we have the facilities and the trainers to help them achieve their goals.
Right. We collaborated with Martin Chisholm, who's a former Marine, who is a veteran a boxing instructor, and he's taken some of the kids to the national level, and indeed his daughter at one point won at the national level, was going to get invited to the Olympic training team out in Denver, Colorado, until COVID hit. So, yes, we have all different levels of participants in the program.
I definitely am feeling like I want to run up a bunch of stairs and hear Eye of the Tiger right now. Love talking this morning with Hal Rosnick as well as his son, Michael Rosnick. And this is an amazing organization, the Chick Rosnick Boxing Club. It's dedicated to teaching the art of boxing to both boys and girls in the Stratford area and the surrounding area. So I wanted to ask you guys, you know, last year you did your first annual fundraiser, and that was really to help with the cost of the facility, the equipment, the program, so on and so forth. Tell us a little bit about that, and are you guys going to be doing annual fundraisers? Give us some of the details.
Yeah, last year we had our first annual boxing show at the Marriott Hotel. It was an absolute sellout. We couldn't fit another person in there. It was great. There was over 20 fights. Everyone was excited. It was really a memorable evening. This year, the second annual boxing show is taking place at Vizzano's Four Seasons in Stratford. It's at 337 Kenyon Street in Stratford. And we're excited again. We expect some 350 to 400 people. It's open to everyone, but if you would like to go, you better get your tickets early because we expect another sellout.
So, okay, so it is still open to the public. If people wanted to go to that, where do they get their tickets?
They're not for sale quite yet, but the website is info@ chickrosnickboxingclub.com. Or they can call the club at 203-551-4691.
Okay. And
And do you guys have a website, though, if people wanted to register their kids, if they wanted to be able to use your services?
Yes. Again, just info@chickrosnickboxingclub.com.
Okay. I think this is a really great idea. And it's relatively new, right, Michael? When did you guys start this?
2015 was, okay, I believe, when we began.
That's amazing. Okay.
Collaborating with Martin Chisholm, and now it's developed into a flourishing program, charitable organization, and our goal is to grow the program and to get as many of the youth involved from various backgrounds, various towns. The more, the better.
And Melissa, we are fully accepted as a 501c3.
Oh, okay. I know in my notes it said pending, so I was wondering.
Right.
I didn't know. Okay. No, that's really good to know. And I'm curious, you guys, you know, we were talking about this earlier in the interview about what's going on in our daily, in our climate right now. You know, and I know even as a mom of an almost 4-year-old, we're already starting to have those conversations where he's scared. And I hate it. I hate that this is the world we live in sometimes, but it's the reality. And I'm wondering, you know, how do you guys handle, if you have kids, you know, especially if you have families coming in saying, I want my children to feel safer as individuals. I want them to feel more confident as individuals when they go into a school or a supermarket or wherever they go in life. How do you address that without instilling more fear, if that makes sense?
I think boxing, as well as the discipline of sports in general, gives you a sense of confidence. It gives you a sense of belonging and part of a community. And it just lowers the temperature. You don't have to react to every comment that someone makes you or every gesture that someone makes towards you. You learn through discipline how to handle this maybe socially sensitive circumstances. And that's why the United States government itself is doing a major study and has major grants towards athletics in general to help youth control aggression and violence.
Mm. Yeah, it's really interesting, and you're right, they are. They're actively looking at that. And I thank you both again for creating Chick Rosnick Boxing Club. I thank you for sharing all the details with us. We have run out of time, but if people want to reach out to the club, how do they do that?
You could find us at chickrosnickboxingclub.com. You can also contact the club and the director, Martin Chisholm, at 203-551-4691.
Hal and Michael Rosnick, again, attorneys. That's their day jobs. They're attorneys, but they also created this incredible Chick Rosnick Boxing Club, a registered 501c3 organization dedicated to teaching the art of boxing to young people in the Stratford area and beyond. Thank you both so much. We really appreciate it.
Melissa, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, we'll talk again soon. That, again, is father-son duo Hal and Michael Rosnick here on WICC. And, of course, if you want to learn more, they do have a website and a phone number, and we'll put this all up on our podcast where you can get more information there. Last week, I told you in our newscast that the Connecticut Working Families Party announced the endorsement of Julimar Ortiz for the 23rd State Senate District. Now, Ortiz would be challenging incumbent Senator Dennis Bradley, who you just heard in our news and have been hearing for months now, is facing federal charges. So this is very interesting, and I was excited to have Ortiz on the show with us this morning, learn a little bit about her campaign and what this would mean for the Bridgeport area if she were to take this Senate seat. So good morning to you, Julimar. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, who are you? Where'd you come from? And what sort of your goals are in running for office?
So, Melissa, I'm actually from Bridgeport. I grew up here. I went to Bridgeport Public Schools. I ended up graduating from Bassick High School. And I started my career kind of like you, as a news reporter. I studied broadcast, and I ended up working as a journalist covering politics. So that's how I got into this profession. And what really struck me was seeing the, you know, political uprise in the last few years and being able to really identify with a lot of the movements that were coming up. Growing up in Bridgeport, I faced a lot of the same challenges as people in this community face, including homelessness and housing and food insecurity. So I just really wanted to learn more, and I started working at the state capitol back in 2017, and, you know, I almost couldn't close the jar after that. I learned so much working up there for seven state senators, including the senator who used to represent this district, Ed Gomes, and was also the first person in the country to win a legislative state seat on the Working Families Party line. So all those things inspire me, the community, working for great leaders such as Ed Gomes himself, and really trying to move the needle on progress here.
So, and I think it's interesting, Julie Marr, because as a journalist as well, I think it's one of the things, you know, we've started to see a shift in politics. We, you know, instead of career politicians, again, a lot of times those are the majority of the people who are elected, but you're starting to see a shift where more business people are getting elected. I mean, our own governor is really a businessman more than he is a politician. And you are starting to see journalists become more intrigued by politics because, most journalists go to school and learn that you've got to tell the facts, you've got to learn both sides of every argument. And it's one of the things that's very much lacking in our politics today is compromise and knowing both sides of a story and being able to think logically and not just always opinion. So I love that detail about you personally. I love that as a fellow journalist. But also, as you mentioned, you have an upbringing in Bridgeport. What are the things you think are lacking currently with Senator Bradley, who you would be replacing if, in fact, you were elected?
So one of the things that I think Bridgeport really needs is someone who's going to be able to bring their voice to Hartford without, you know, worrying whether or not they're going to unfortunately end up in jail soon. Unfortunately, you know, Senator Bradley does have a federal case. But beyond that, there are things that he voted on that just haven't been representative of our district.
Like what?
As well as he... for example, the legalization of marijuana, I think that's something that has really affected Bridgeport and Stratford with the war on drugs. And, you know, that's something that he voted against, as well as the bill a few weeks ago that was to protect people coming into the state who were trying to access the right to choose. And that's another thing that he voted against. And as the only woman in this race, you know, it really is something that I'm passionate about to make sure that we protect that here in Connecticut. And you know, we are a great state when it comes to reproductive rights, and we have to continue that.
And we're talking this morning to Julie Marr Ortiz, and I think this is really, it's pretty unbelievable. What was your reaction when the Connecticut Working Families Party announced that they wanted to endorse you for this seat?
You know, it's funny, Sarah Ganon, the state director, called me, and I've known Working Families Party for years, but I literally screamed. I couldn't hold in my excitement. Not only was it just an honor for me because I'm you know, walking in the footsteps of Senator Ed Gomes, who was a labor champion and really a fighter for working families. And he was my mentor at the Capitol, so I learned so much from him. But it really meant that I could also bring forward issues that, you know, moderate or establishment Democrats don't always bring up, or they talk about, and when it comes to actually voting for them or writing the legislation into the bill, sometimes they take a step back. So the Working Families Party is really a leader in our state. They were behind the Fight for 15 being passed. They were behind paid family medical leave, which was extremely popular and just couldn't get through the finish line passed. And now they're working on things like Fair Work Week to make sure that people who work in service jobs or retail jobs are able to have predictable work schedules. Like, these are things that unfortunately we should have already had as policies, but they're really moving the needle on ensuring that workers are being taken care of and that there's practical policies in place to make sure that employers are not taking advantage of workers.
So by having the Working Families Party behind you, that was enough to force the primary in August. It's between you, Dennis Bradley, who's the incumbent, and I believe also Reverend Heron Gaston, who got the Democratic Town Committee endorsement, correct?
So not quite. I do still have to collect signatures.
Oh, you do?
To be on the Democratic primary. Yeah, so actually today and tomorrow are the last day. My team has been out every single day. I've been out door knocking every single day, getting signatures. We have to collect 2,000. And in Bridgeport, I think we're the most number of signatures that you have to get in order to get on the ballot. Mm. There's another congressional candidate getting signatures in the first district, and he has to collect 4,000. So imagine one city needing to collect almost half as much and as, you know, an entire congressional candidate. It's because we have so many registered voters, and the amount of signatures that you need to collect is the percentage of the amount of Democratic voters that are registered and who voted in the last election as well. But we're confident that we're going to reach our number. And, you know, today's really just the final push to get through the finish line. And, you know, it has to be Democratic voters. We've also been registering voters, which has been really great. They see my walk card. They're inspired by the vision, or just me being a young candidate, being a woman, being someone who's from Bridgeport and who can identify with their needs. And people have been registering and signing enthusiastically.
And being originally from Puerto Rico, which we didn't really get to talk about in the beginning of this, you would also be the first Latina to take the seat for Connecticut State Senate, correct?
I would. It's a sad fact that we've never had one. We've had a Latinas in the House. We've also had Latino men represented in the Connecticut State Senate, but we have not had a Latina woman. And myself, Aver Bermudez, is another Senate candidate who's running up in the northwestern part of Connecticut. So we're in a race to, you know, break that glass ceiling and ensure that Latina women, who actually make up a significant portion of Connecticut's population and who many times are the heads of their household and the main breadwinners, especially single mothers here in my district, really deserve a voice at the table.
Mm, absolutely. So if you want to learn more about Julie Mar Ortiz and her campaign, and you are a registered Democratic voter in the city of Bridgeport, be sure to check out her website. It's literally her name spelled out, Julie Mar, J-U-L-I-E-M-A-R, Ortiz, O-R-T-I-Z.com. It's as simple as that. And again, you've got a couple of days to get those last minute signatures. Good luck to you, Julie Mar. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. You too. Believe it or not, we're down to just two more segments with Bob Donovan until we get into the fall season, essentially. So we're going to make these ones good. Today, we are talking about marriage vital signs, kind of like the signs that we need to assess our physical health, like, you know, your weight or your blood pressure, things like that. Apparently, there are vital signs to make sure our health of our marriages are in a really good place. Good morning, Bob. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. Doing great. How are you doing today? All right.
I can't complain. Yeah. I mean, I feel healthy. Yeah. I think I feel healthy. We'll see where my marriage is at by the end of this diagnosis.
That's good. Yeah.
What are some marriage vital signs? What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So this came to me just a few weeks ago. I was with a couple, and the guy was like a physical fitness freak. I mean, he was at the gym 3-4 times a week, and he was stacked pretty good, and he put so much energy into his physical health, but his marriage was a mess.
Mm.
And I tried to tell him, can you channel that energy towards relational health? And that's kind of where this came from. And then I thought about, well, what is that? What does that look like? Right. So I, you know, it could be anything. I mean, you and Derek and Karen and I, you come up with your own, but I'm going to give you five that you might think about.
Okay.
One really is, do you have the desire to assess your marriage? I mean, that would be one. Like this couple I was talking to, like, he had no desire to do some work on the marriage health, but he had a ton of desire on his physical health. So probably the first thing would be, do you have a desire to look at your own marriage vital signs, your health? And honestly, there's only one way to do this, and that's being intentional about your health. That's it. Like, it doesn't just happen. In fact, if you don't, you naturally kind of drift apart. So, you know, having that desire to be healthy, to be strong, to assess yourself is probably the first one, right? If you don't have that, it doesn't matter what the rest are.
Right. I guess it kind of, you follow suit. So what you mean, Bob, in layman's terms, is that when you wake up every morning, you have to put thought into where is my marriage at today? How can I improve it? Or how can I look at, you know, how do we stack? How are we? Like, where are we at? Like, that should be something you're thinking about on a daily basis.
I wouldn't put, that's, my wife would be crazy with that pressure to think about every day, but I think on a fairly regular basis to look at your marriage health, and we can talk about what these look like, but I think it's having a regular practice of looking at your marriage relationship and your health. That absolutely would be it.
Well, you know, you and I have talked about this several times on the show, being intentional. And I know, even just from listening to some of my listeners who have said, you know, I've started to take what Bob says, I'm putting it into my marriage, and I think that's great. But how do you know if you're being intentional enough? If that makes sense.
Well,
like, what if you feel like
I was
intentional about something? I thought this was a really big deal. Okay, you know, check it off the list. I'm a good spouse now. Talk a little bit about being intentional and how frequent you should be intentional in your unions.
Yeah, great. Yeah. So go back to your example using you. I love doing that, like using you and Derek as examples.
Well, you know, we're out there, you know, poor Derek. Derek's like, I had no idea I'd be this much in the media, but he's used to it now. So yeah, use Derek and I as an example. It makes everybody else feel comfortable. It's fine. We're good with it. We're fine
so,
at this point.
You know, the key is it's actually less about what you think and more about what your spouse thinks. Okay. So the first thing would be, I would really sit down and, like, again, I would ask Derek or myself with Karen, like, how do you, and that's, we do this, like, we really do this, you know, how do you think we're doing? I mean, we just were away in Florida for a vacation, and we talked about that, like, how do you think we're doing? So it really would be, how does your spouse think you're doing, and how do you think you're doing? And I would, okay, let's peel that back. What does how you're doing look like, okay? And that's a few more thoughts I have on that, but it almost is less dependent on what you think and more dependent on what your spouse, because if you think you're doing great, but, you know, Derek, maybe not so much, guess what? You're not, right?
Right, right. It's really not your opinion because you're not married to yourself.
Right.
So, and it gets less and less intimidating the more you have those conversations. I can remember when you first gave us that, because I'm a perfectionist, so is Derek. You know, we want straight A's. And we don't get straight A's. So it's intimidating at first, but it does get a lot easier. I think that's a conversation we have. Every date, every time we have a few minutes to ourselves at night, you know, it's pretty frequent that we do check-ins. And now it's just, it seems, I don't know, it seems pretty normal now.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, because I think it is intimidating because people don't like to have these, especially if you're more of a conflict avoider like me. Like, if you're more of a conflict avoider, you dread these conversations.
Oh, dread
them. If they're irregular.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes.
But if you kind of build them in, you know, if it's more on a date or a little vacation, which is actually works worse for my wife and I, like, when we're away, it's just more natural to have these conversations.
I agree.
So
I
think you're right. That if you just build it into your normal, kind of, not daily, but regular conversations, it's very, very helpful.
We're talking this morning with Bob Donovan, our marriage consultant on the show, and we're talking about the health of your marriage, your vital signs. And I think a couple of these are kind of things that you should look at, you know, like faith compatibility, emotional connection. And what's interesting about both of those, Bob, is that most times when you enter a marriage, you're not on the same page. For both of those, Derek and I could not have been on different pages, different books. I don't know what planets we were on, but not the same ones. I can tell you that. We were not. We just weren't. We just weren't because we were brought up differently. We lived in different households. We brought different things to the table. So, like, our faiths were different and our emotions were very different.
Yeah. And that's, by the way, that's pretty common. You know, you know this, we work with hundreds of couples and pretty much every couple says that we're so different. But it's more than just different personality. And I think having a common faith And what's more important than that is really a desire to grow in that faith is so critical. And I'm just relaying, like, our own, we just had our 47th wedding anniversary, and a significant part of that has been our common desire to grow in our faith. And for the Christian faith that we have, understanding how to be humble, how to be teachable, how to live out sacrificial love and grace, less being less self-focused and more spouse-focused, we couldn't do that. I couldn't do that without my Christian faith.
Mm-hmm.
So learning how
Same.
To do that. And Kira and I are very different, so how she grows and how I grow different. So that's not the issue. The issue is having that desire. I just think that's a significant part, whatever your faith is, but having mm-hmm. that desire to share, think and battle, and desire to grow.
Right. You don't have to be identical, but just having the desire to
right.
to do it together.
Right.
Yeah, it's really
right.
interesting.
Right.
Every other week, we get to check in with Bob Donovan, our marriage consultant, to better our marriages, our unions, because we know it's still a point of struggle in the United States, trying to have healthy marriages and keep people together. So this morning, we're talking about vital signs, kind of ways to check on the health of your marriage, and a couple other things that you could do, Bob Donovan. It sounds like being transparent. What does that mean between spouses?
Yeah, that's a tricky one, because it really comes down to kind of, I'll just use the term, being known and knowing one another. And it really is, again, a healthy transparency means being comfortable and feeling safe to have a conversation about what's going on inside. And typically, and again, I think your husband and I are somewhat similar in this, that it's not uncommon, I think, for you or Karen to say, like, what's going on in there to us?
Yes.
So,
good Lord.
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, typically with a couple, there's an oversharer and an undersharer, right? So typically, and generally, men are undersharers. They have a hard time in getting in there, identifying emotions and feelings, and sharing them. So being transparent really means letting your spouse know what's going on in you. And a good example is, there's a couple that I've been with, and at some point this might be a topic for us. It's what's really happening in the marriage versus what they perceive is happening.
Oh, we should definitely do that topic.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness,
neither one of them
yes.
are really, like, being transparent in what's really going on. Like, they were with me separately, but not together. So,
well, because they're not in a relationship with you. You're not going to judge them.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter. You can kind of walk away from it.
I would guess. It's safe, right? It's safe, right? And that's the point with this, is your marriage safe? Will you feel comfortable in sharing what's going on in there? And like in our case, like for years, I just had a hard time in expressing emotions, and that wasn't really healthy. And it just, Karen was great at just getting in there and trying to be encouraging and asking questions. And finally, I had to see a therapist to help me just grapple with, like, help me, like, I want to do this, but I've never been taught this. So she gave me some techniques on getting in touch with my emotions and expressing them, naming them, and being able to share them. And actually, it's connected to one earlier, is that having an emotional connection. I think these two are very common. I think that when you have an emotional connection and are sharing what's going on and being transparent with one another and having that trust and vulnerability, I think you feel connected. And that's a sign of a strong, healthy marriage. So it's a scary one for people that aren't used to this, but it's a critical one for helping on your marriage health. It really is.
Yeah, I agree with you. And this one as well, because I think this can really define how you act in your marriage, which is moving forward from past wounds.
Yeah, it's a big one. It's a big one. Like,
that's a hard
one. Who has been raised? Who's been raised in the perfect house?
No one.
Right? With the
good
perfect
luck.
Mom, right? Perfect dad. It's just not out there. So most of us come from broken homes. Again, I think a couple weeks ago I talked about, right, the imperfections of people, and your dad, my dad, my mom, so on, were imperfect. They obviously did the best they could, but often they're left with kind of unhealed, insecure wounds. So I'll be somewhat specific with this. So for me, like, I grew up in a very unhealthy home of dealing with conflict. So my mom was very verbal, and she got emotional sometimes, and that really shut me down. So we came into our marriage, like, any sign of conflict, man, I retreat.
Yeah, you just ran.
Even today, I have a physical reaction. but I don't let it dominate. I really have learned to move past that. But that's what you have to learn how to get past your past wounds and hurts. You do, because we all bring them, whatever they are, you all bring them. Karen grew up in a home where the saying is, children are better seen than heard.
Oof.
I mean, that describes. So she wasn't used to sharing her needs. And again, it took us a long time to work through that. But those are two examples of not really letting your past influence how you are in your marriage. So, and sometimes you can do that with each other and talk it through. And sometimes you need professional help to get in there. Like I did, like,
yeah,
I remember sitting here and I need to like figure this out. And, so I actually saw somebody to help me, like, and it was really interesting what she did. She kind of like, what's going on physically in you? And I would explain that. And that's where we started to like, okay, name that. I said, okay, I can get that. So, you know, if you're struggling with unhealed past wounds from growing up in your marriage, it might take somebody that's a professional therapist to really help you with that. But it is really important to get a handle on that one.
It is. And you know, it's sad, too, because it's not necessarily a reflection on how much the person loves you. It really is a reflection kind of back to transparency. Being vulnerable is very uncomfortable. It's very, very uncomfortable. And I know that was something my husband really struggled with, was being seen as not strong, not having all of it together. And did he want to be perceived that way? And I know from my point of view, I'm definitely a sharer, but it's interesting because when it comes to sharing, if something bothers me, I'm horrible at it. Horrible. Like my husband, you know when something bothers him. You never know with me if something bothers me, because I grew up in a household where you didn't really do that. It wasn't that you couldn't share. My parents were very open to it. But like, I had a grandmother who lived in our home with us, and I watched every day lie about, you know, that she was in pain. We had no idea. We would never know. And unless you really took the time to be like, Grandma, you clearly are in pain. And she's like, nope, I'm good. I'm fine. So that's how I've always been. Nothing.
What was your lesson from that? What was your takeaway? Right.
Well, we needed intervention. You know what I mean? We needed intervention. We both did for different reasons.
The message is don't share what's going on. Right. Just keep it. You know,
that's just it. Exactly. Right? You stuffed it, and then there'd be a day that I'd blow, and Derek would be like, "Where? What is happening? What's happening right now? Where did this
come
from?"
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So you were very verbal. But when it comes to sharing what's going on, that's a whole different issue for you, huh?
I'm like that at work too, though. I'm very much like, I give enough information that people think they know everything about me, but they actually don't know the core of me. They know a lot of surface. I'm a very private, deep-rooted person. But it's one thing to do it with your colleagues. It's another thing to do it with your spouse, though. It's interesting because that definitely was very hard for our marriage. For a while.
And the key is, I'm sure your husband helped you out. Just like Karen helped me tremendously with that. And I'm sure Derek did too. So the key is, if you struggle with that, is your spouse giving you that safe place and encouragement to kind of like do the work necessary to kind of be transparent and explain what's going on in there. Right?
Exactly. Just digging it out a little bit. And, you know, and we only scratch the surface here. I know there are a lot of other vital signs that you can look at, you know, like your sex life, teamwork, collaboration, companionship, how much do you support each other, nonverbal reactions. There's so much we could dive into, Bob. And I'm if people want to reach out to you, because maybe we didn't touch on what they're struggling with, but they do fall under a category where they're like, gee, I just don't think the health of our marriage is in a good place. How do they reach out to you?
Yeah, that would be great. But I had an email from a listener last week, and we had a great exchange. So that would be outstanding. And it is true. There's others, and couples should sit down and talk about, like, maybe these five aren't for them. Maybe there's other five that are for them. But if they want to reach out and discuss anything, it's the email is bdonovan, D-O-N-O-V-A-N, @blackrock.org.
All right, Bob, we really appreciate it. Like I said, I know we're down to one more session before you take a break for the summer, so I look forward to having you in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, Melissa.
All right, talk to you.